I'm Dan Runcie, the host and founder of Trapital, and you're going to hear another conversation today from our Trapital Summit. This one is a sit-down fireside chat with the CEO of Splice, Kakul Srivastava, and Media Research's senior consultant and analyst, Tati Sirsano. If you've been listening to this show, you've heard them both on here before. Last year, Kakul and I did a sit-down interview where we talked all about Splice's strategy and that fine balance that AI, specifically generative AI in music, needs to hit. It needs to be strong enough to be helpful for creators to do what they want to do, but not so easy that it takes away the fun and creativity from actually making the music. During this talk, there are three big topics that Kakul and Tati touched on. The first is investing in the new generation of talent. There's this one quote that Kakul said, "Our goal is to lower the barriers for young creators." So you'll hear more about that and Splice's efforts to support that. The second thing is overcoming that challenge in the relationship between creators and rights holders. We hear about it at the major level, but there could also be some challenges at the indie level too, and you'll hear her talk about that and Splice's involvement there. And then the third piece talks about AI's continued transformative role in music creation and hitting that fine balance between not making it too easy that it takes the fun, but making it valuable enough that it's actually additive to the creative process. Again, really enjoyed this conversation, and I want to get another shout out to Splice for their support for our Trapital Summit and making it possible. So thanks to Kakul, Francis, and the whole team there. Here's the conversation with Kakul and Tati. Let's dive in. This episode of Trapital is brought to you by Hangout, the explosive new social music platform taking iOS, Android, and Discord by storm. On Hangout, you can host release parties where fans listen together, chat live, and fall in love with your music. You can see immediate results too. Artists are experiencing 200% bumps in their streaming after Hangout events. Join top artists across all genres, from indie sensations to chart toppers that are already on the platform. But there are only limited spots available, so secure your Hangout release party now and supercharge your next drop. Go to hangout.fm, that's hangout.fm, or click the link in our show notes. I would like to introduce the CEO of Splice, Kakul Srivastava, and Tati Sirsano, senior analyst for Media Research, to have a conversation about the overlooked side of music. Welcome.
Hello, everyone, and welcome, Kakul. So I think that most of the people in the audience are probably pretty familiar with Splice or somewhat familiar. But the truth is that if you've listened to Kakul's walk-on song anytime this summer, which let's face it, we've all probably had on repeat.
It's a great song.
You're probably more familiar with Splice than you think. So tell us about Espresso.
One of the cool things about that particular song, but many songs that you hear on radio or your streaming choice, is that it was created by incredible producer, and he started, you know, with some of his inspiration on Splice. And one of the things that's really neat about Splice and the moment that we're in right now is that it's not sort of the secret. It's not like the secret, oh, you got a sample from Splice, but rather people are really proudly talking about how Splice is core to their creative workflow, how people start on Splice, listening to music, listening to sounds, getting excited about what they want to create. And whether it's Julian Panetta, who created Espresso, or Fred Again, or many top producers, being able to proudly and confidently talk about how Splice is part of that creative workflow has been really cool.
And there's so many top producers who are using your platform, but there's also such a range of creators that are on Splice. And I know you've talked about this sort of tale of two cities in the music industry, where recorded music is focused on the roughly 7 million people that are releasing to DSPs regularly, but then there's actually about 500 million globally that are making music in some form. So you start to realize how much the traditional industry kind of operates on those fringes. So I know you think that that 500 million has been kind of underserved. Tell us a little bit more about why.
Yeah. So let's talk about the 500 million. And by the way, I think 500 million is still too low. That's a group of people on a global basis who are making music. These are people who are guitarists, pianists, singer-songwriters, rappers. And for many of them, their workflow is still pretty digital. let's talk about what they're investing in, right? They're going out, they're buying an instrument, they're investing in classes, they're spending time on their craft. And increasingly, what they're realizing is they need to adopt digital workflows. And so many of these people are also going out and learning digital audio workstations, or DAWs, as we talk about them. And so when you talk to them, you talk to these people who are using DAWs, which is a slightly different number. It's about 79 million based on the Media research. So, you know, that's 90 million in the latest study, right?
Something around there.
So 90 million people globally use a digital audio workstation to make music. But if you ask them, do you think of yourself as a producer? They're like, no, I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm a musician. I'm a, you know, artist. And those words are really, really important. But they are all trying to create music digitally. And I don't think as an industry, we understand them really well. And I think that's just the next phase of this work. It's so easy to focus on the Taylor Swifts, the Sabrina Carpenters of the world. And they're so important because they are pushing out the state of the art. But you don't get to be there if you don't start somewhere else. If you don't start with a passion around making music, you don't start making that investment of money, time to build your craft. And I think we need to focus on those people a lot more, on the creative side of making music.
So help us understand them a little bit more. How do you think about, especially with so many different types of creators who may not even consider themselves producers, even if that's what they're doing?
Right.
How do you think about your target audience segments and how to develop products for them?
So one of the things that's nice about Splice is that we operate at quite a bit of scale. So we've got hundreds of thousands of users who come to Splice every day looking for inspiration. And so we have a lot of data that we can sort of tap into just by trying to understand our users. So I'll talk a little bit about our users. 90% of our users describe themselves as producers. The vast majority of our users are creating music multiple times a month. So they're pretty active, fairly tech savvy creator. And I think that that's a really important segment to serve. And we do that pretty well. So our retention rates are actually quite high. What's interesting is this next group of people that we're starting to really understand and spend more time learning about, who are musicians, who are creators, who take their craft incredibly seriously, but are maybe new to that digital workflow. And so what are their needs? How do they want to create? And I think this is where some of these new technologies really open some doors for us as well. AI, machine learning, all of that stuff, which I know people are sick of hearing about, but I do think it opens up some really interesting opportunities.
It's really valuable to have your perspective here, because I think a lot of people in the audience coming from the recorded music side, your business model is based on what creators are earning, what your artists are earning. Whereas from the creator tool side of things, companies like Splice, your business model is the opposite. It's what they're willing to spend. And so I would imagine that frees you up from some of the questions that the industry is grappling with right now around, you know, streaming saturation and fragmentation. How do we create superstars, et cetera? But of course, you also have challenges of your own. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Like, what is sort of easier on your side of things and what's actually harder?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I don't think it's an easy one to answer. There's a story in the industry, or where many industries, you know, just follow the money. And so it makes sense to me that most of the people in this audience and most of the people who are going to be on stage today are really focused on the monetization. How do you make money from music? It's so important to understand that most of the people who are creating music are not doing it for those extrinsic rewards, right? They're not doing it because they want to get the likes or the money or the fame. They're doing it because they have to. They're doing it because they're creatives, they're artists, and this is important. And sometimes when you're able to focus on that vision clearly enough, you get all of those other things too, but first you have to focus on that creative vision. So I just think that's super, super important to understand. Our business model is the subscription business model, to come back to your original question. And I think that a lot of people have struggled with the subscription business model, as we all know, and this came up in the last conversation as well. There's subscription fatigue, and what will people be willing to pay for subscriptions? I think that's really, really important. For us, the subscription model really works because it aligns our incentives very, very deeply with the creators who come to Splice. We are very much focused on how do we make sure that we earn people's respect, we earn their value every month so that they will come and pay us the next month for their Splice subscription. And that's really, really important for us. It makes us focus on the user experience. It makes us focus on making sure we always have new, fresh content for people. We are providing them new tools, better search, new rare finds, all kinds of things to make sure that we're earning that value every month. So I would say that that's the hard part about it, is that you kind of always have to earn that next month's subscription. But it's also the easy part because we're not trying to use their data to get ads or use them as content providers or anything like that. Our incentives are 100% aligned with who our users are.
That's kind of hard to find in a lot of areas of the music industry, incentives on every side actually being that aligned.
Right.
And something else that I've noticed in my research at Midia that I know we've had conversations about is how those people who have a passion for music making, need to do it, but aren't necessarily trying to make it their career, are actually the ones who spend the most on subscriptions to platforms like Splice, whereas those who are trying to make it have less money to spend because they're trying to make it. There's this whole segment of people out there that I think the industry doesn't really understand, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just tell you a super goofy story. I subscribe to Masterclass. I don't think I've watched a single Masterclass video this whole year. And so I know that my subscription's up at the end of the year and I'm going to go and try to cancel and I'm going to have a little crisis. Look at all this stuff I could learn, right? Look at what else I could do if I just, and maybe next year I will have time to do that. And that's a goofy, weird thing about me, but it's also about my identity. Who is it that I want to be? And I think for some of our, you know, music creators, it's, God, I wish I had more time to do this. This is so important to me. This is my identity. I really hope that this subscription or this investment in my craft allows me to invest in that part of my identity. And I think that's really important to understand as well.
It feels like there's a lot of actually psychology that goes into your, you know, how you understand your audience and you know, the business that you're running.
I've spent most of my career working on tools for creative people. And so for me, it's really about trying to get inside the mind of what it takes to create. It's actually one of the hardest things. And I love what Troy said earlier about the sort of synthetic artist. It also totally freaked me out. And I think the idea of the human being creating something that is founded in their lived experiences, their pain, their heartbreak. It's one of the most human things that we can do. And so I feel like the work that we're trying to do is pretty rewarding and it's worth it to get into that psychology.
So you have to have like that art and science kind of approach. And actually on that note, I wanted to talk to you about retention because I think it can be still intimidating to get into music making, even though the barriers to entry are lowering and to stay inspired. And I think you've mentioned that retention is one of your key KPIs, which is about getting people inspired and motivated all the time. Yeah. How do you do that?
So I would say that creation is hard for everybody, right? So if you've been doing music creation for years or decades, it can still be just as hard to start the new thing as if you're new to it. When you're new, I think you have new tools to learn. But as I was saying earlier, our users are really motivated. So they're investing in learning the digital audio workstation. They're investing in learning the newest plugin. You know, they're doing all of that stuff. So that startup cost is less. Our value proposition really is around inspiration. Listening to sounds on Splice sparks something for people. That's what we focus on. We focus on, how do we help you get started by giving you the broadest palette of sonic ingredients? Just this year, we've sent people to India. We're sending people to Sao Paulo, Brazil. We send people to Japan. We send people to Korea. And the reason we're doing all of that is because we want to be where these sounds are. We want to work with authentic creators, sound designers, musicians, instrumentalists, and bring those sounds, bring those pieces of inspiration to our users. It's profound work. And there's almost like a anthropology, you know, in that work, which I think we feel really proud of. So I think that part of it is important, having that collection of sounds, but it's also the tools. One of the, you know, weird features that we've launched recently is called Rare Finds. And it's been a surprise hit. It's basically a feature that helps you find the sounds that are least popular on Splice. And people love it because they want to sort of challenge their brain with things that most people aren't listening to. And I think that's really fun too. So I think that helps us get people over the creative hump. But the other thing that we're doing is, and our users are asking us, so they're kind of dragging us deeper and deeper into the creative workflow. So from Splice, over the next weeks and months, you're going to see us go much deeper into the creative experience through partnerships, through our own technology. So that's coming soon as well.
Let's take a break for our Chartmetric stat of the week. It's that time of year when Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You dominates the charts. If you look at its year-over-year performance on any platform, whether it's Spotify, YouTube, TikTok, SoundCloud, you will literally see a line chart that looks like a staircase. It's relatively flat for most months of the year, but once November hits, it spikes right up and stays that way for 7 to 8 weeks. But that 7 to 8 week spike is enough to turn a song that wasn't even platinum in 2019 into a song that was just certified 16 times platinum by the RIAA. Additionally, the song is just a few weeks away now from joining the 2 billion streams club on Spotify, and the music video recently passed 600 views on YouTube. All I Want for Christmas Is You is like a seasonal stock that live on these platforms that continue to grow their active users year over year, which continues the growth for Mariah Carey's single. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, and AI has an interesting role to play with this because, I mean, there's so many things. It can help lower those barriers to entry, make it more accessible, make music making less intimidating. It can make it so that you don't have to be terrible before you get good. You can be like decent before you get good, which is a hurdle that people have to go through. But then you also, when integrating AI in your tools, have to make sure you keep the magic of creation alive, right? If it feels too much like pushing a button, it's not fun to people. It's not fulfilling. And I think especially with a platform like Splice, having a lot of people that are creating for fun in a way, you need to allow them to do that and feel fulfilled and not have AI take over the process. So talk a little bit about striking that balance.
You and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. I think this question is actually one of the single most important questions that our industry, the music tech industry, has to answer, which is how to find that right balance. But before I address that directly, because I've spent a lot of time thinking about this particular question, I want to just challenge one part of your question, which is the fun part. You know, I run every morning and I don't do it for fun. It's actually miserable. I absolutely hate it. But I do it because if I don't do it, I go crazy. And for many of our customers, many of the people we're seeking to serve, music making is not fun. It's really hard. It is gut-wrenching. They always feel like they're bad. They always feel like they don't know how to do it well. Someone else knows how to do it better. Like imposter syndrome is a huge thing. The people who do it on Splice and the people we're looking to serve, it's not fun, but it's essential and it's really important. And the reason I'm making a point of that is because when we think about people who do something for fun, we're a little dismissive of them. And I don't want us to be dismissive of these people. And this goes back to the overlooked side of music, right? Like these people are doing it because of this intrinsic value that they derive from this work. And we have to respect that. We have to give them better tools. In the best of circumstances, music making is hard. And so the tools should not additionally tell you that you shouldn't be doing this, that you're not good enough. The tools have to be better. And the tools in this space are decades old. And they were built for a different world. Many of them were built for tape work, right? So we have to move the industry forward. And in that context, I think AI is an incredible boom, right? I think AI will make things a lot easier. But I have to say that, unfortunately, some of the new companies in this space, right, who are coming in and coming up with these shiny new AI experiences are being just as dismissive of these people. They are being just as dismissive, and they'll talk about these people. It's like, people who can't be bothered to learn a DAW. What about the people who can be bothered to learn a DAW and it's still too hard? What are we doing for those people? And so push button creativity, right? I type in a bunch of words and a song comes out. I mean, that's like Nike inventing a robot to come to my house to go running for me, right? Like, that is not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a shoe that doesn't hurt. And so I think we have to do better. I think we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard and build better tools that give people creative control in a nuanced way to translate emotion into vibrations. And I don't think that's easy. So I spend a lot of time talking to people in other industries, you know, my friends at Adobe. What are they learning about UI that works for this post-AI world? I'm talking to friends who are in the video industry. Like, what are you learning about UIs that make sense in a post-AI world? And the answer is no one has great answers yet. It hasn't been figured out. It's very, very early. But boy, it's a problem worth solving. And we're spending a lot of time working on it.
That's a great answer. And it's funny, push button creativity almost feels like an oxymoron. I think about that tweet where someone was like, I don't want AI to make art for me so I can do my laundry. I want AI to do my laundry so I can make art.
It's like, exactly, 100%.
Yeah. And I'm curious too, your expectations around AI's ability to drive this surge in new creators. Because I think the headlines would have us think this is going to be massive, but are your expectations kind of in line with that? What do you think is going to happen?
I think the people who are serious about music, who are serious about their craft, I don't think that group is going to grow as fast as the people imagine around like TikTok creator, you know, all of that stuff. I will also say that TikTok creator is one of those broad terms, and there are actually lots of subgroups of very different kinds of TikTok creators, and we need to invest to understand them all differently. But I really hope it does. I really hope it does. You know, I met this incredible professor at the Berklee School of Music recently, and one of the programs that he is running is teaching music production to people in prison. And he has found it to be an incredible tool to help support the journeys that these people are on. I hope that music becomes more accessible. I hope that it's able to turn a lot of the mental health issues in our industry for our young people are astronomical. Can better music tools perhaps help with that? And we have real data that says that it can. So I hope it does.
And I think another really valuable vantage point that you have for people in the audience is understanding this new generation of creators and what shifts are happening, what their aspirations are, how they prefer to work, things like that. And so I was curious too, if there's anything that has been particularly interesting or surprising to you lately that you've learned about your user base.
Well, I will say they're young. When I was at Adobe, I think like our average user age was 52 or something like that. At Splice, it's in the 20s. It's, you know, it's very young. And I love that. And you can argue that, you know, the newest music creators are even younger than that. So we spend a lot of time trying to learn about, you know, what people are looking for. I think there is a generational divide. I think that there's a mindset, and you hear about it in the media, you know, I want my, you know, original authentic sound, so I'm raising goats so I can make my own snare drum. I think that mindset is increasingly not relevant to the young creators today. I think young creators really connect with the experience on TikTok, on Instagram, on these social media platforms where you build off of other people's content. And that in itself is a conversation. And it references something that came before. There's a love of music from different generations. I'm surprised at how much my 14-year-old daughter loves the 80s, like more so than I do. But I think that is a hallmark of this next generation. And so I think that allows a different kind of creative tool to be built, one that starts with content as at its center point, and you build using those building blocks, whether that's something that you've created, something that you've borrowed, something that you want to sound like. And I think that's going to be a really interesting thing to see develop out in the market.
Yeah, we are sort of firmly in this, like, I call it like remix culture, where 100%. You're right, it's yes. normal and expected that a new generation of creators and fans, like part of their entertainment is playing with the building blocks.
Yeah,
and
I love that. And it's one of the ideas that you have talked about before. And I just love the idea of creation as entertainment. It's super interesting, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think obviously it follows with common sense. The more you love music, the more likely you are to make music. We find that in our surveys. And if it's getting easier to make and play around with music as a fan, I think we can expect that more and more of an artist's like proportion of their fan base in the future will be making music in some way, whether they're serious about it or whether they're just playing around with stems for fun and doing a remix. So that's really interesting that you've also noticed that in your user base. That's really valuable.
Yeah, I know that we're going to have a conversation around super fans later, but I kind of, the analogy that I think about is, you know, those of us here who are in the music industry and we're thinking about the top creators, it's like we're like the Olympics committee or something like that. We're focused on these superstars, these super athletes. We have to care just as much about the kids in the gymnastics studios all across the country, because those kids, some of them will turn out to be these incredible athletes and be on stage, but some of them are going to be the biggest fans of the Olympics because they know what it's like to do that work. And so arming this next generation of creators with ways to use their passion for creation to have a conversation with the artists that they love, to show their respect for their artists that they love by building something in their likeness, I think is really powerful. It's going to require us to think differently about rights. That's the conversation that we should be having now.
And that's such a good analogy about the gymnastic students or the, you know, kids in sports leagues. It kind of leads me into another thing I wanted to ask about, because we started this conversation with, you know, that this side of the industry has been very overlooked. The recorded music side hasn't really paid as much attention. But it does feel like that's starting to change a little bit in the way that you have music companies of all kinds that are sort of expanding across the value chain. You have another creation tools company, BandLab, adding distribution and marketing. You have, at some point, TikTok was working, or ByteDance, on music creation tools, kind of integrating backwards. So I'm wondering if you think these two sides are starting to pay more attention to each other. How do you see that kind of playing out?
I wish I could say yes, I totally am, but I'm not. I was talking to an incredibly powerful executive at Warner last night at our dinner. And, you know, she was previously at YouTube, and she's been on both sides of this particular place, you know, on one side with creators, on the other side with rights holders. And I think that, you know, and as we were talking about it, we were both commenting on how it's still too hard. I think we all recognize that we need to get to that place where these conversations are more fluid, but I think it's still really, really tough. So we're not there yet.
But to your point, it's so important to be invested as a recorded side in the new generation of talent. And to your analogy of those that are in the gymnastics camp group, because they are going to be the next generation. So it's kind of important to pay attention to. So we're just about to finish up. I had one last question for you. Can I ask, do you think that Splice will expand across the value chain in that way in the future? Do you think you'll start to pay more attention to the other side?
That's a great question. And I will also say no. Right now, we are so focused on the creative side of the industry. All of you are focused on the other side, so you don't need one more person to focus on the monetization side of it. And I think there's so much work to be done for creators on the creative side, on the creative tools. So I think if anything, you'll probably see us go deeper into the creative workflow than on the monetization side of it. But who knows? It's a super interesting industry. Anything can happen. But I definitely feel like we have a lot of work to do where we are focused right now.
Well, thank you so much for this thoughtful conversation. Everybody, round of applause for Cockle.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Send it to one or two people you think would really get value out of listening to this episode. And while you're at it, if you could rate and review the show, that would be great. Rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate the podcast on Spotify, rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps make sure that the word gets out about Trapital and what we're building here. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you next time.